On today's pod, we have Patricia Madsen. Patricia is the author of Improv Wisdom, Don't Prepare, Just Show Up, and a professor emerita at Stanford University, where she started teaching in 1977. In 96, she founded the Creativity Initiative at Stanford, an interdisciplinary alliance of faculty who share the belief that creativity can be taught. Among other things, she taught design improv for the School of Engineering and has been a guest lecturer for the renowned Stanford Technology Ventures Program and for the Mayfield Fellows Program. Patricia, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're so welcome. I'm so pleased to be here with you today.
And together with me in the co-hosting chair today, we have none other than Nick Vertigans.
Hello. Hello, Patricia. Thank you for joining us just after your breakfast.
Yes.
And also we have Stefano Mosconi.
Hello, David. Hello, Patricia and Nick.
Patricia, you taught at the Stanford Technology Ventures Program. It's one of the centers of innovation of the world. And in an interview, you said the creative process requires us to work collectively. If there is a lack of innovation, it's not because there's a lack of ideas, but a lack of cooperation, a lack of listening to each other. Could you open that up for us a little bit? How can improvisation help us be more innovative?
That's a wonderful place to start. And I'm going to ask for permission to back up a second to say...
Please do.
Improvisation, there's some misconceptions about it that I'd like to put to the side. And then I really want to answer that question because it's foundational. So often, just the word improv brings up the notion of comedy or being funny, having a clever ability to come up with a funny thing in real time. And while it's certainly true that improvisation can lead to and is used to create comedy, my bias in all of this is that it's much more than just a comedy creator, that improvisation is it's a mindset, it's a way of looking at things, it's a Tao, that improv has a set of tools and ideas that can help us make a lot of things happen. So you asked about that, the notion of collaboration as primal in innovation. I think if we look at our world today and the issues that we're facing and all of the stuff that's on our plate, which is considerable, that there are ideas aplenty, but certainly in the United States, we can't get our government to agree on anything, even the time of day. So there's some way in which our muscles that listen to one another and field the good ideas and act upon them, that muscle has gotten flabby, lost entirely. And that the central principle that makes the whole mindset of improvisation work is that of agreement, of starting from a positive bias, from assuming the best in your partner and in others, from this notion that we're interested in advancing any idea to see where it might go, rather than competing. And I think that the whole competitive nature of a lot of our systems and politics is keeping us from getting a lot of really wonderful things done. That the number one rule of improvisers is to say yes. And what that really means is not to like the thing that is in front of you, but to open to it, see how you can take that idea and advance it, rather than competing with ideas. We start with the premise that we all have what we need if we just look around and start to use it and develop a much more agreeable way of working together. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes lovely sense. Really good.
Patricia, have you worked with any of your politicians over there?
Gosh, I have not. And in fact, there were a few studies where some improv people took U.S. politicians and put them in a room together and tried to see what would happen. And the net result was at the end of it, they didn't necessarily like each other better, but they could see the value that comes from listening and developing. That was almost a foreign idea, that you should open to what someone else is saying before you jump in with your position. No, I haven't had that privilege, I guess, yet. But I have to say, some years ago, the New York Times was doing an article about what I would do if I were president, and they invited me to contribute. So I said, if I were president, I would send our Senate and our House of Representatives and our judiciary on a two-week improv retreat where they would have to spend the entire 2 weeks saying yes to each other and building on each other's ideas.
I would love to see that. Love to see that.
That was obviously for the comic effect, because it's,
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I hope you get a chance to head over to Washington one day and sort those guys out. David, I cut you up there. I apologize.
No problem at all. Wow. Thank you for that answer, Patricia. That was really interesting. You said yes, and is the guiding principle. At the moment, I think we live in a world of yes, but, and the world of yes, but is actually means no. It's a polite way to say it. And over here, we have so many political parties, it's extremely difficult for them to agree with about anything. But we were also interested to think about leadership more widely. Nick and I were both leadership coaches, and Stefano has a leadership position in a telecom here in Finland. So we're really interested in this intersection between leadership and improv. And maybe just to add to that here, I think in the Nordic area, we're living in a very very planned, scripted environment here in Finland. We always know when the winter is coming. We've got very sharp seasons, and maybe it's led to something in the Nordic character about planning ahead and being very organized and so forth.
But so, it's always coming. Winter's always coming.
Yeah, winter is always coming. So we're interested to explore that angle with you too. So where do you see that leaders today could learn from the improv techniques?
I think the reality today, as much as we would like to plan and execute, that is the modus operandi that I think is most familiar to most Western minds, that we find a good idea and then execute it. Everything has gone cattywampus in our world, and that the...
Can you translate that into Finnish for us?
Cattywampus, yeah. That's when the caddies jump all around and wump, wump. It's gone mad. And the reality is that we're in a period where so much is unknown and unknowable that the leaders of today really, the qualities that a leader needs is agility, that ability to change on the dime, imagination, the ability, I think, to let their world expand into different ways. And the third thing would be the ability to be comfortable with ambiguity. That ambiguity of being in a state of flux is almost the new default. And that I think leaders today need to find a way to lighten up rather than hunker down and look around with greater attention. If I wanted to give you a really fast template for what improvisation is, it's four A's. First, attention. We need to really notice what is going on rather than what we'd like to go on. We have to really open our eyes and look around with appreciation, but attention, and then acceptance. That's that yes thing. I have to not reject the situation that I'm in with my group, for example. Attention, acceptance, and then appreciation. We have to find the good and use it. Find the good and praise it. There's a way in which we're often working to try to solve problems rather than cultivate and expand what are the kernels of good in everything that's going on. So that's three A's: attention, acceptance, appreciation, and then action. Once we notice the good, once we're in a position to see what's happening, accept it, open to it, find the good in it, then we're ready to step forward and try something. And I think a good leader in today's world is not only willing, but models making mistakes, accepting them, and using them. There's somehow a huge black cross or a circle with a cross in it around making mistakes. We don't want, nobody likes making mistakes. But improvisation teaches that a mistake is often a gift. And even if it's not, it may be a step in a different direction. So we have to notice what that is. Don't let the fear of making a mistake get in the way of trying things. That's what innovation is, really stepping forward to see what happens.
Stefano, we are talking about appreciation and appreciative inquiry and strengths-based approach. We've been talking about lots of the exciting things, but how about you, Stefano? What's your relationship with failure?
That's a lovely question.
Thank you. And so what's my relationship with failure? It's, I think, as bad as everybody's else. Nobody likes making mistakes, I think. But nevertheless, I've done a lot. And that's a bit, I think, what brought me forward in life, actually. If I look back, all my mistakes have been things which I've tried and they didn't work out. But now, of course, one could stop at that and beat himself or herself because a mistake was made, or then try to move on and learn something. First of all, admit that a mistake was made. And it's, I think, the most difficult step, because only after you do that, then you can actually start learning from something. But admit that a mistake, that you have made a mistake, it's actually the most difficult part. Then everything after that, I think it's easier. But yeah, so that's my relationship with failure. And it's been a good partner all my life, I would say.
In improv, we have a kind of a game that we use with failure. We call it the failure bow. And what happens is if you screw up and you notice it, it's like you immediately throw your hands in the air and say, ta-da, ta-da, I screwed up. And the idea is that if you notice, it's that moment Stefano is talking about, instead of going, oh, no, I'm so sorry, I'm happy to do that, instead of curling in on the guilt of a mistake or something like that, you immediately notice it. Aha, that didn't work. And somehow it's finding a lightness rather than an ego-centered response to mistakes, because that's what makes it hard. Get the I out of it. In fact, good leaders model that moment of, oh, that didn't work. Let's move on. There's something about even the tone of voice that you deal with.
Patricia was talking about the four A's. So it was attention, acceptance, appreciation, and action. And we were talking about this fundamental, this mindset, and this fundamental element of yes and. So accepting things, building on things, developing things together. So you start from that place of positivity that, yes, we can do this. And I just wondered, Patricia, to what extent is this linked to mindfulness and having a mindful approach to life?
I think there's a great tie-in, exactly. I think they have a lot in common, because that first step in improv is really being right where you are rather than off into some kind of fiction or future place. But mindfulness reminds us to be where we are and appreciate it. There's something very simple, but of course difficult for all of us, because minds like to think ahead and work on the next thing. That just staying in the moment, I think, which is mindfulness talk, is exactly what the improviser begins to become an expert on. Another point that I wanted to throw in is that there's seems to be counterintuitive maxim to just be average. My Stanford students are often surprised to hear that. What do you mean, be average? We've all had the experience when we're trying really hard for something. There's an interview we really want to exceed at, or we've got to make this paper just perfect, or please. The minute we start trying for that excellence, it shuts us down in a way that our natural ability to think and create can't come through. So there's something about the trick of aiming for average. I can do an average report. Anybody can do that. that takes the pressure off and allows us to actually access our best work. We have a group of artists here on the coast where I live in El Granada, California. And before the COVID, we used to meet every Friday night and do bad art. It's called the Bad Art Night for ladies. And sometimes gentlemen came too. And the thing was, we would bring our projects.
Yeah, I would sign up for that.
Exactly.
Sign up for a bad art night for ladies, definitely.
It was marvelous because it was different than just having art night. Art night allows you to think, I don't know that I've got anything to do now, but I can make bad art. So it's an example of this aim for average or write a bad poem or something. Do something that's ordinary. One of the in the Zoom rooms now, when I'm trying to teach an improv class, one of the ways I have us introduce ourselves is to go around the Zoom room and say, pretend that you're a reporter reporting in for television or something, and tell who you are and where you're located and give a boring fact about the circumstance. So it might be, we can do this now to demonstrate, and I'll turn it over. Let's see, I'm Patricia Ryan Manson, and I'm reporting here from El Granada, California, on the coast just south of San Francisco, where the weather is really nice. And I have a wastebasket that really needs to be emptied. Okay, over to you, David.
What is it full of? The wastebasket. Yeah, what's it full of? Needs to be empty. What's in it?
That's a good question. There's paper. There's a little bit of, so some tissue. I've got a couple of cookies that fell down there.
Oh, so how do you know that it really needs to be emptied?
You know, that's an exceedingly good question. I could just keep filling it, don't you suppose?
And what's the wastebasket's perspective on all of this?
The wastebasket's perspective is it's made out of a kind of fabric. Twine.
If you tip it a bit further, it's going to go empty over onto Nick's head.
It might. You're absolutely right.
But so how do I go and tell to my boss that I have to aim for average in my day job?
I don't know that you have to tell him, because we have to sign him up for an improv class too, so that he realizes that somehow there's this benefit in all of this. We all know how often it is when we aim for the gold that it keeps us from our best work.
So it unlocks in a counterintuitive way the power we have to create something new.
Exactly.
Okay.
And creating something new happens when we take a step forward to create rather than step back and think. There have been interesting studies, too, about artists. And there's an art class where they were testing out some theories. And they told both groups that they were going to be graded on their single best work. And one group spent the entire 10 weeks working and theorizing, et cetera, to come up with that single work that they would then produce and get the grade for. The other group made as many artworks as they could. So they made dozens and dozens of things. And in all cases, it was the group that made many that had the best artwork. So that there's something about just doing it that we're more likely to succeed if we take a step and try something and do things, so that that fourth A of action, we have to get in there and do rather than think ourselves to death.
Bias towards action will, in the end, win over overthinking.
That is the improv way and belief. And I think there's some science behind that, too. But also agility, imagination, and the ability to tolerate ambiguity are other qualities that we want to cultivate. I don't think anyone is ever really comfortable with ambiguity. We like to know how things are and what they're going to be, what the agenda is. But since ambiguity, or things being chaotic and constantly changing, happens to be the current reality, the sooner that we become easy with it, you don't have to like it to find a way to embrace that. That's the acceptance part of our model.
How do you start liking ambiguity, or at least being comfortable with it?
I think stepping back from it, away from the initial judgment, I just don't like that. How do we change how we feel? I think we can step back, and it's like mindfulness. It's, take a breath. I notice that really annoys me. Okay. It's going to keep going on. Interesting. That person's not going to change. So can I breathe into accepting? I think we have to accept a lot of things we don't like. We're all in this COVID together. Certainly we don't like it. But the sooner we deal with it realistically, sometimes that little annoyed feeling can slip away. I try to work with my own annoyances. Since I can't change other people, what I can do is see if I can't breathe into what's bugging me and let it go, and then focus my attention on something that I can do something about.
Yeah, absolutely. My experience is that, of course, you can accept failure, you can even be comfortable with failure, but if the environment you're in is not tuned in and geared towards letting you accept failure and make mistakes, then you will be just another guy who made a mistake. So what have you learned about creating this atmosphere of psychological safety during all these years, Patricia?
Fantastic question. And it goes to the heart of all of it. Certainly, let me say something from the vantage point of leadership. I think the leader has to model the things we're talking about. Because if you have a leader that's not buying into the values we're holding, it is very difficult. It's possible that you start, if you're with an organization, with a frank conversation about the kind of environment where psychological safety can exist. But you're absolutely right, Stefano. It has to be modeled and held to. There's a fabulous book about the fearless leadership by Amy, what's her face?
Edmondson.
Edmondson, right, yeah.
How about this? It's time for a quote, and this is from Improv Wisdom. And in Improv Wisdom, we hear that being alive is like riding a bicycle. We always feel a little off balance and insecure, but in the act of balancing, we come out alive. Isn't that a beautiful quote?
Thank you.
Lovely.
It's great, yeah.
Lovely,
yeah. Yeah. And balance is precarious. So, you know, we're never fully secure.
And we sometimes crash.
Yeah.
And we sometimes crash. That's absolutely true. And if we've ridden a bicycle, we know that at some point we get to a state of exhilaration where it is working well enough that there's a freedom and a sense of aliveness. And then, as Nick points out, sometimes if we're then so enhanced with our sense of freedom, we stumble and life will wake us up and say, attention, you're not invincible here.
I was curious about the three A's that lead to the fourth A of action. So the appreciation, attention, and acceptance. Which one would you say is the most under threat in 2021 heading into 2022, which should we really be paying attention to?
From my perspective, it's appreciation. I really think that we're all thirsty and swimming in the lake. Certainly there are exceptions to this in third world environs, but we have so much. We are surrounded by systems and energies and ideas and roads and people who are working constantly to make our lives happen. So I think gratitude, not just for things that we like. I'm a big proponent of gratitude for the ordinary, for being amazed and grateful for the connection now, the internet connection that is allowing us to make this conversation. In my book, there's a chapter, Wake Up to the Gifts, and I talk about the value of seeing how amazing ordinary life is. I think that people are emphasizing gratitude. And I want to go one step farther than gratitude. We often think of gratitude. What are three things you're grateful for? And it's easy to find three things you're grateful for. What are the 10 things that are serving you that you haven't noticed yet? So I think appreciation is the most in siege. We all seem to be terribly entitled.
We are giving stuff for granted, I think.
Yes.
We've gotten used to this level of well-being and abundance.
Wonderful.
Totally, yeah.
I'm reading a book that I like very much. It's called Try Giving Yourself Away by David Dunn. It's more examples of the value of never resisting a generous impulse. That's my favorite new quote now. It's marvelous. If you just take the smallest impulse, and it may not be generous in the sense of money, I might say something that I wouldn't ordinarily say to a stranger or the fellow with the cup and his hand out, yeah. Put a dollar in there. So if there's an impulse to do something positive, to help someone, never resist that. Go for it.
I love that. Never resist a generous impulse.
Right.
Yeah. And it's nice, isn't it? Because apparently it gives one quite a nice mental boost as well, I believe. There's some kind of psychology research behind that. It's lovely. Everybody wins when these things happen. When the magic happens.
Patricia began by talking about our listening muscles have all gone flabby and you need to keep exercising them. And the more you exercise them, the easier it is actually to become generous or to stay generous.
But isn't listening also a huge part of appreciation? Because if you don't have your antenna up, then how can you appreciate stuff if you don't listen to things happening and to people talking?
So then it goes with attention very strongly, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So I guess we got to the end of our time here, and it's been too short for me, I have to say, Patricia, but I hope it was longer for Nick and David.
It's too short for us
too
as well.
Short, yeah.
We keep talking here. It's been a lovely conversation with Patricia and David and yourself, if I don't know, so...
The same way. It was just marvelous meeting you all. I feel like we're old friends now.
Yeah.
Look, I think, Patricia, you absolutely win the award for the guest who has smiled the most.
Good. Good.
And you even made Stefano laugh and smile as well.
I do that.
That's difficult to do, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, look at his face, look. Big smile today.
I felt so much energy in this call. And all the things that were touched are things which are very close to my heart. Appreciation, helping others, creating a space for others to flourish, making sure that a mistake doesn't bite down. So... It's all things which are very close to my heart, and I try my best to practice those. Then, of course, I might not succeed, but that's part of the trying and making mistakes. So I think I'm still on the right track. Thank you very much, Patricia.
You're welcome, and we're all already improvisers, so go forth and improvise and try.
That's actually my feeling, is that I've been improvising all my life. I have no idea where I'm
making
going.
Making it up, yeah, looks like we all have.
I have no idea where I'm going. I'm just making it up every day, every moment of my life, and then somewhat it's going.
British English, we call it muddling through.
Yes, and as long as you're enjoying it as well, that's important.
And not running the country, then that's fine.
yeah. One last question. So I just want you, Patricia, when you did the thing, when you were the reporter and you were reporting about your bin, how did David do with his response? Because I was expecting something different from David.
I was too. Yes, I had a total different expectation, but I hope I went with his.
I was improvising. What was your expectation?
I thought you had to then be a reporter and report on where you are.
Ah,
so I say Nick, over to you.
So Nick Vertigans, London, BBC News. I'm reporting here on a pencil without any lead in, for example.
Exactly.
So I was looking forward to your bit, DJ, and then you started talking about the bin. And then Patricia went with it, and I thought, perhaps I'm
okay. I kind of missed that.
That's wonderful, because that's exactly how improv works. I make a certain offer, I have an intention, but it goes somewhere else. Somewhere else.
That was great. Did really well.
Even when anything screws up, it's great. because it's demonstrating what I want to teach anyway. So yeah. I love being with you fellas. And if I come to your Helsinki city, I'll look you up and maybe we can have a cup of coffee or a beer or something.
Oh, yes, please do.
Both during the summer, it's better.
Hi, listener. We love this spot so much. If you're thirsty for more about failure, building psychological safety and gratitude, we suggest you to listen to episode 46, Failure and Redemption with Tom Milahde, founder of The Other Danish Guy, or episode 44, Nurturing a High Trust Culture with Maria Rantaho, chief HR officer of Elisa. And finally, episode 39, with former Prime Minister of Finland Alexander Stubb, which talks about gratitude. Go and check this out.